It is wonderful to be with you all this morning, have the opportunity to sing praises to God and to be able to study His Word. And many of you are aware that this is a First Principles Sunday, and we especially just want to take some time to say thank you so much for the visitors who've come and given us the opportunity to allow us to get to know them better and them get to know us. And if you would, we'd love if you could pick up one of these pamphlets that just tell you a little bit about us and our aim and what our goals are here in our worship at Kleinwood. And if you would, fill out a card in there. Let us get to know a little bit about you, but more so than just paper. We'd love to be able to chat with you and visit with you if you just stick around a little bit afterwards. And just so thankful for everyone who's able to be here this morning. So, not too long ago, I was surfing the web, and came across a post by some younger guy who was basically, I guess, putting some notes in a blog and just told a story about how him and his wife were discussing the meaning of life. And he went on to state that she was a little bit surprised when he said that the purpose of his life was to own a BMW Series 7 automobile. And then he said that he was surprised at the fact that this was his goal in life, because everyone knows that the ultimate goal in life, or the purpose of life, is to own luxury vehicles. And he was pretty strong about this point and pretty adamant, and felt that the fact that the Dalai Lama, who has a Land Rover, and the Pope, who has a modified Range Rover, well proved his point. And basically, the blog just turned out to be something about how he wanted to make a point to his wife on how important this was and how they should have a BMW. But we kind of talk about the purpose in life that way quite a bit. And we often use it in a loose manner and joke around a little bit about it. We might joke around and say, well, my purpose in life is to watch football and to barbecue and to be a loyal Texan. I mean, what more is there than that, right? Or we also see it used in a lighthearted manner, talking about the purpose of life, when we see a t-shirt that says, life is fishing. Or perhaps a t-shirt that says, born to play soccer. We talk about the purpose of life in that way, but a lot of times when we consider the purpose of life, it's a lot more serious. It's a question that often sobers us and challenges us and brings up a lot of discussion. And there's plenty of reasons for that. A, this is a question that's relevant to everyone. Also, this is something that we've all probably considered, and we feel that our view of this is pretty important. And I would expect so if our view is what we try and strive to live by. And that's basically what I want to talk to you all about a little bit about this morning. Is this question. I want to explore this question of the purpose of life and see if we can come up with a determined and conclusive answer. And all jokes aside, just as there are many silly different purposes in life given, there are also many different serious purposes of life given. And let's consider a couple of those. For example, the world has come up with many views such as wisdom and knowledge is the purpose of life. And Plato, the philosopher, was a pretty large advocate of this, and basically ended up stating in this philosophy known as Platonism, that the meaning of life is attaining the highest form of knowledge. And there are many other views that parallel and go along with this view, to basically learn as many things as possible, to know as much as possible about as many things as possible, basically to be a Renaissance man of knowledge. And you can see why someone might consider this as a worthy purpose of life. Not only would it just be something nice to be that intelligent, to have that highest form of knowledge, just to impress friends and win games at, you know, when you go and play trivia on a Saturday, Sunday night, but it could also do some things like save you a lot of trouble, save you a lot of save you a lot of suffering and heartache if you're able to understand and use rationale and logic to make decisions, to avoid certain consequences, and to be able to live a life that might be more pleasurable because you avoid ignorance. So that's one view. Another view that might come up is love. Love is the purpose of life. To be loved and to love someone else. To find your soulmate. Yeah, that's just romantic, isn't it? I think a lot of 14-year-old teenage girls probably hold this view. But not just 14-year-old girls. Probably a lot of people would consider that companionship is something worthy to live by. And something that could be that important that they find it as the importance of their life. Also, fame and fortune. For some people, to basically be powerful, to have a position where they can be noticed and to leave their mark, leave a legacy. Perhaps they want to die a legend. You know, that's their idea of to be able to be famous. And then the fortune that comes along with that. The ability to basically buy anything, spend at will, allows you to enjoy a lot of pleasures. Another one we might consider, or the world considers, is to be original. To be able to create something truly new. To be known by that, perhaps. Other such things. Long life. Some people will think, man, if they can live till the age of 90, then they've got it made. They've done well for themselves. And then perhaps even the more callous view of reproduction. At the end of the 20th century, based upon insight gleaned from the gene-centered view of evolution, biologists George C. Williams, Richard Dawkins, David Hague, among others, conclude that if there is a primary function to life, it is the replication of DNA and the survival of one's genes. And then there's also pleasure or happiness, to simply enjoy life. Aristotle has stated that happiness is the meaning and the purpose of life, the whole aim and end of human existence. This is it. And you'll have people advocating this view of such philosophers as Socrates, who will consider that happiness is one of the ends of moral action and that pleasure is the supreme good. Thus, a hedonistic worldview wherein bodily gratification is more intense than mental pleasure. And so those who might follow this view will appreciate immediate gratification rather than long-term or delayed gratification and basically see denial as unpleasant and unhappy. And I like how Voltaire kind of sums up this concept of basically enjoying life, having fun, seeking pleasure. You know, you see something you like, take it. That's the purpose of life. Voltaire says, "Pleasure is the object, duty, and goal of all rational creatures." Pretty abrupt. So, are these the right answers? Do you think that any of these answers in and of themselves fulfill the meaning to the purpose of life? Are any of these self-sufficient? Is this all that is worthy? And you might ask, well, how could we even ever know? I mean, who could possibly be able to tell us the answer? Who would have the means to explore and consider all these facets of life so that we might have more of an objective answer? Well, as we look at the Bible, a book that we know ultimately gives all truth, we read of a man named Solomon who has the same question that basically every man has. But he also had the means to explore all the different facets of what the answer to this question might be. We see Solomon as the perfect candidate. In 1 Kings chapter 4, it shows us that Solomon had splendor. He had fame, he had wealth, and of course, he had wisdom beyond all measure. And even from the beginning of 1 Kings chapter 4, you look at verse 1 and it says, "So King Solomon ruled over all Israel." I mean, he was a king. right there that fulfills a lot of these requirements. He was anointed and had this authority over the kingdom. In verse 21 of chapter 4, it says what he ruled over. So Solomon ruled over all kingdoms, from the river to the land of the Philistines as far as the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all of his days. Now, if you go and skip over to verse 24, it says, for he had dominion over all the region on this side of the river from Tifsa even to Gaza, namely over all the kings on this side of the river. And he had peace on every side around him. And Judah and Israel dwelt safely, each man under his vine and his fig tree, from Dan as far as Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. I mean, you see, this is an incredible reign. If you got out a map and considered what this covered, this was basically the extent of the promise that was given to Abraham. This was the land that was going to be inherited, and Solomon is the one who gets control more so than any other reigning king. But not only does that he have that, but if you'll consider also verse 22 in this same chapter, it also talks about the wealth that he had. We're probably well aware of some of these passages and what this entailed. Now, Solomon's provision for one day was 30 cores of fine flour, 60 cores of meal, 10 fatted oxen, 20 oxen from the pastures, and 100 sheep besides deer, gazelle, roebucks, and fatted fowl. This is one, I feel like I would just need one sheep or a goat. I don't know. I don't feel like I would need to go the whole 20 oxen. But if you continue in verse 27, and these governors, each man in his month, provided food for King Solomon and for all who came to King Solomon's table. And there was no lack in their supply. They also brought barley and straw to the proper place for the horses and steeds, each man according to his charge. I mean, he's got it all. I mean, not only does he have the possessions, but he's got people waiting on him hand and foot. And then you continue even a little bit further, and you get a glimpse of this extraordinary wisdom that Solomon has. Verse 29, 1 Kings chapter 4. And God gave Solomon wisdom. And this is probably my favorite part. An exceedingly great understanding and largeness of heart, like the sand on the seashore. Thus Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the men of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan, the Ezrahite, and Heman, and Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahal. And his fame was in all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs. I love this. And his songs were 1,005. And he spoke of trees, from cedar tree of Lebanon, even to the hyssop that springs out of the wall. He spoke also of animals and birds, of creeping things, and of fish. I mean, he's basically like a zoologist right here. And I mean, he could have plenty of degrees, it seems like. Verse 34, and all men of all nations from all the kings of the earth who heard of his wisdom came to hear the wisdom of Solomon. You know, there's your fame as well. Everyone wants to hear him. And we see that that's exactly what happens. In 1 Kings chapter 10, the queen of Sheba, she's going to travel from afar to hear, because she hears of this great fame and wisdom. And then you see that she herself is completely amazed. You know, she wouldn't have believed it had she seen it with her own eyes. And even then, she says, man, not even the half was told. And it continues to talk about Solomon's great wealth in this chapter. Also, verse 14 of chapter 10. The weight of the gold that Solomon received was 666 talents yearly. And then he makes an extraordinary throne. And in verse 20, it states that it was like nothing made ever before. And finally, verse 23, Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all other kings of earth. The whole world sought audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom God has put in his heart. I mean, Solomon had the ability to indulge himself in whatever pleasure, whatever happiness he wanted. He had the ability to put all these things to the test, to consider all these purposes of life. And what's incredible is that's exactly what he does. We notice that he is basically the author of Ecclesiastes, and Solomon takes this book and examines all these things, and lays it out for us to consider. He explores life under the sun and tries to find out what the purpose of life is. And you see that in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 12 through 13. We're going to be in Ecclesiastes quite a bit for the remainder of the lesson. But if you look in chapter 1, verses 12 through 13, it says, Solomon states his intent. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. So there you have it. He's going to put all these things to the test. And so he begins. If you'll read verses 9 through 11 in chapter 1, let's consider this. Originality, to make a name for yourself. Could this be the purpose of life? What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was already here long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old. And even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who will follow. Interesting words. I mean, you think about Solomon, too. Not only is this the guy who's got the fame, the fortune, everything else, but this is also the guy that built the temple. The temple. The temple that was glorious, that was arrayed with gold that people completely marveled at. And he says, no, it's been done before, it'll be done again, it'll be forgotten, and it's no longer standing now. It's vanity. So, originality finds out that we go ahead and mark that off our list. So let's consider the next. Fame and wisdom. All right, let's look at verses 16 through 18. Chapter 1, verses 16 through 18. So he moves on. So I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. And you remember the part of the reason why you might think that ultimate wisdom, this highest form, would be so great, is to avoid all the suffering. And here he basically states the opposite. And if you'll go ahead and continue in chapter 2, verses 12 through 16. Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successors do than what he has already done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. Okay, maybe we're onto something here. The wise man has eyes in his head, while the fool walks in the darkness. All right, that seems like it's adding up. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I thought in my heart, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said in my heart, this too is meaningless. For the wise man, like the fool, will not be long remembered. In days to come, both will be forgotten. Like the fool, the wise man too must die. Well, that didn't quite cut it either. You can go ahead and mark that one off the list. All right, well, let's move on to reproduction, to live a long, healthy life. I mean, surely this makes sense. To have a lot of children bring great joy to your heart. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 6, starting in verse 3. A man may have 100 children and live many years. Yet no matter how long he lives, if he cannot enjoy his prosperity and does not receive proper burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. It comes without meaning. It departs in darkness, and in darkness its name is shrouded. Though it never saw the sun or knew anything, it has more rest than does that man, even if he lives 1,000 years twice over, but fails to enjoy his prosperity. Do not all go to the same place? Solomon basically assumes here that the purpose isn't solely or merely reproduction. It's not living a long, healthy life. These things don't cut it. There's still something more. This alone can't be it. And even if you achieve this but are wicked, basically he says it's better if you were never born. So this can be X'd off our list as well. It's frustrating. What about happiness, pleasure, fortune? Maybe this is it. Surely, to be able to enjoy life, I mean, I would have put that one at the top of the list from the get-go. Let's consider this. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, starting in verse 1. I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. And so I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers, a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. Verse 10, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took no delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. And, you know, we've basically taken Solomon as our prime example. We've went back to before Christ, to ancient times, and looked at this person who was probably more qualified than anyone I could think of, anyone we can imagine. And we looked and have seen, basically, that none of it cuts it. None of it does the purpose of life justice. But you know what's interesting? We didn't need to go back to Solomon to see him as this example. We can see it in a lot of other places. We can see it modern day. I mean, you think about celebrities, for instance. If there was anyone who was going to accomplish the goal of life, if these were it, it would have to be celebrities. You think of what they have. First of all, to be a celebrity means you have fame and fortune. Typically, you're going to have a lot of money. You're going to be able to enjoy yourself, indulge in pleasures, and most of them certainly do. And so often, though, you hear about such celebrities being miserable and depressed. And so if they have accomplished their goal in life, they sure don't seem to feel like it. Doesn't seem to add up. I mean, you'd be astonished at the names of celebrities who've been known to have depression. Consider some of these people. Drew Carey, Harrison Ford. I mean, here we got Han Solo over here. He's depressed. Heath Ledger, that makes sense. J.K. Rowling, she actually revealed that she had at one time been suicidally depressed in an interview with Adil Amini. Jim Carrey, I mean, I can't even imagine him not smiling, let alone be depressed. Halle Berry, Sheryl Crow, and the list goes on and on and on. You know, one website listed 135 famous people who have struggled with depression. You know, people that you would believe, they've got it all. I mean, their lives are made.
I mean, they're living the good life.
We see, no, they haven't found the purpose of life, or they don't seem to think so.
But you know, we don't even have to consider these celebrities
to wonder if any of these options are correct. We can take a look at ourselves.
We can see the emptiness of all these things in our own lives.
And certainly, we won't be able to go to the extreme that Solomon did, but that's what's interesting. We don't need to. The simple pleasures that we've had in life, that we've strived after, that we thought would give our life meaning, we've realized they've come up short. I mean, you think about the things that you thought were so important, that you were sure that were going to give you fulfillment. It's interesting how once you achieve it, you still are wanting. You ever get that feeling? I can think of just from the beginning of life, when I was a young tyke, you know, there were desires that I had. Toys, friends, love. I remember, I must have been, I could have been under 10 years old, and what I thought was the world's ultimate goal was to have Batman and Robin action figures under the Christmas tree, and I just knew that that would make me complete. That was going to make me happy. Everything was going to be, it was all going to be gravy after that. I was so excited for Christmas to come so that my life, you know, could end. And I remember that day coming. And I remember not only did I get Batman, I got Robin, and the motorcycle that had the battle rifles and the ejection seat. I mean, what more could you want? And I'll tell you what, I was pretty pumped after that. I was really excited and played with it for a couple hours. And then life moved on. And, you know, for you, it might not have been a toy. It might have been sports. I remember I had a friend who just, man, she was a Kansas fan, heart and soul. Just completely diehard. She wanted Kansas basketball to win that NCAA tournament. And I remember her saying something like, man, you know, if they win, my life will be complete. And I remember rooting for Kansas just because I wanted to see them win so that her life could be complete, to ask her about it afterwards to see what she thought. And they did win. And so I remembered going up to her and asking her, yeah, so Kansas won. And she's like, yeah, it's great. I said, so what now? What do you think about next year? Well, I hope they can win again. Yeah. It just still wasn't enough. And really, it never is. You know, people think that relationships and a date will solve all their problems. And then they get one, and they realize there's still things they have to worry about. That didn't solve everything. You think about Solomon. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Surely, he would have been able to find the purpose of life somewhere in there. So I guess we can go ahead and cross love off the list as well. And you might make the excuse and say, you know, Brian, I get your 10-year-old fantasy, but it's different when you're grown up. Things are a little bit different, and I wouldn't want those kind of foolish things for my purpose of life. But really, has it changed much as you get older? We still have the same dilemma, the same problems when we try to put objects and these kinds of things as our purpose of life. You want the car, you get the car, then you want the house, then you want the perfect job. You get the perfect job, then you want the perfect raise. Then you get the perfect raise, you want the perfect retirement. You get the wife, the perfect wife, then you want the perfect kids. Then you want the perfect grandchildren, and it never ends. If this is all that we're looking for, we too will find it's just vanity. If this is solely our purpose, then we're going to be sorely disappointed. And even if you're sitting here thinking, well, you know, what if I think that these things are the purpose of life? And we're going to go ahead and answer
first of all, that no, I don't think they are. As Solomon will conclude, actually, to begin the book with, in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2, he says, from the get-go, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanities. And then in verse 14, I have seen all things that are done under the sun, all is vanity, a chasing after the wind. I mean, that's the key phrase of the book, vanity, or this word habel, which basically means vapor, indicating or signifying. It's just brief, meaningless. It's going to leave you unsatisfied. But for those, again, who do feel satisfied, who think that, you know, that BMW or that action figure really does complete their life, they're completely content with that. My question is, what happens when it's all over? Really, that's a big key to answering this question, the purpose of life, isn't it? What happens when it's all over is death. When it comes down to it, death is the great equalizer. If you look at Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 13 through 17. It'll say, I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owner, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when he has a son, there's nothing left for him. Naked a man comes from his mother's womb, and as he comes, so he departs. He takes nothing from his labor that he can carry in his hand. This too is a grievous evil. As a man comes, so he departs. And what does he gain, since he toils for the wind? You know, an elder back home used to say it this way: the stats are in, and one out of one die. Eventually, no matter how hard we try, no matter what we do, we're going to die. And even if you contribute to society, even if you help people in one way or another, it's going to be forgotten. It's going to be passed on. And you know, even if we find a cure for cancer, as great as that would be, we're just delaying the inevitable. We can't take it with us. And some people are left with thinking, maybe there is no purpose in life. Is this it? Is that all there is to offer? Let's consider one more statement in the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Verses 13 through 14. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. And if you also consider Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 17. You don't have to turn there, but it says, I thought in my heart, God will bring to judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time for every deed. Now, we have a judgment that's coming that's as certain as death. And this is why we must fear God and keep his commandments, because this judgment will determine whether we go to one or two places. So we find that heaven is the purpose of life. And that's why we serve God. We keep his commandments, because this is what we obtain. This is the goal. This is our final destination, our final reward, because it's the only place that'll ever be able to satisfy all our desires. There will be no more death, no more crying, no more pain. The older things have passed away, it says in Revelation chapter 21, verse 4. This is going to be a place of eternal rest, eternal joy, not happiness, but joy. The kind of joy that doesn't depend on things, but is content and pleasure. But also, we'll be in the presence of God. Really, that's what the purpose always was. That's why we were always supposed to fear God, keep his commandments. Even in the beginning, even in the garden, that was what it was all about. A relationship with God. He gave a commandment to Adam not to eat of that tree so that they could have that relationship. We were always meant for eternity with
with our Heavenly Father, to be in His midst, to have that fellowship. Our focus can't be on this life. You can't find eternal happiness, contentment, and peace here, because it's always fleeting. There are hills, there are valleys. You can be content, but you're still going to get stressed. You're going to get sad, and you're going to get worried until this life is all over. And again, no matter what we achieve, if we don't achieve heaven, then none of it matters at all. This is our purpose. Matthew 16:26, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his own soul? So again, our focus has to be on Christ. It has to be on serving Him and looking to the next life. Because really, that's what gives this life meaning. You know, unlike those who focus on this life, King David looked for satisfaction in the time to come. And he said, "And I, in righteousness, I will see your face when I wake. I will be satisfied with seeing your likeness." Psalm 17, verse 15. To David, full satisfaction would come on the day when he awoke in the next life, both beholding God's face, having fellowship with Him, and being like Him. John 3:2. And by fearing God, keeping His commandments, we find meaning to life through death. Philippians 1, verse 21, to live is Christ, to die is gain. And we've seen that, haven't we? If you've been living out this purpose, life with God just changes everything. Life now has meaning when God is the center of it. You know, the families we want, the pleasures, the joy that we have, they're obtained, they have greater meaning when we have God as our focal point. I mean, to have a family, to raise them in the Lord, to have a wife, to have a husband that you help go to heaven, you know, to have goods that you can help other people with. That's when these things obtain meaning. That's when we're satisfied. And we're supposed to enjoy these things. God wants us to. He tells us in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, 9, "Be happy, young man, while you are young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart, and whatever your eyes see, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment." That's it right there. He wants us to enjoy. He doesn't want these things held from us, and He gives us blessings to have, knowing that there will be judgment, that we need to be using them for Him. And so the question for many of us tonight is, are we living by this? I mean, many of us, this wasn't some revolutionary conclusion. Heaven, a home with God, we knew that. But the question is, are we living up to it? I mean, is this really what we see and live by as our purpose of life? Or are we still having some of the pleasures, some of the worldly things, wanting some of the fame? But we definitely still want to fear God and keep His commandments. Are we still seeking after those pleasures and those joys? We still want that nice car for the sake of just wanting that nice car. There's an example I want to give, which Bruce Lee tells a story, and it gives us the stage for this little exercise. Bruce Lee was a master martial artist, and he had a student come and ask him to teach him everything he knew about martial arts. And Bruce held up two cups, both filled with liquid. And the first cup, said Bruce, represents all your knowledge about martial arts. And the second represents all my knowledge about martial arts. And he says, if you want to truly know all my knowledge, you have to first empty your cup so then that you can fill yourself up with mine. That's what it's all about, isn't it? If we really want to serve God, keep His commandments, we've got to empty ourselves up with all this nonsense that we've been craving for, that we've been striving after, and strive for Him. And then we'll realize these things are filled up. But we have to get rid of all our foolish considerations and conclusions beforehand and realize that this is what it's all about. We need to quit thinking we have the answers and look to the Word. And we've got to do this, because if we ever get so lost in pursuing these other things, we're going to find out how futile they all were. Because we mentioned there's two alternatives. One is heaven, the other one's hell. A place of gnashing of teeth, a place of torment. And if we enter this afterlife, one way or another, our regrets aren't going to be that we wish we had more money. That, you know, I wish I had more pleasure. I wish I had went and gone to more basketball games. Wish the Kansas would have won more. Or that we had been more knowledgeable or had contributed to a society that will no longer exist. You know, our regrets are going to be that we didn't store up riches in heaven. That we didn't talk to our neighbors about God. That we didn't do more godly deeds. So the conclusion is to take a word from the wise. Take a word from Solomon, who spares us of all the pain and toil of trying to find the answer. He's already done all the work for us. He's given us the conclusion, if we'll just accept it and be able to enjoy the greatest purpose in life that there has ever been known. If you would like to do this at this time, if you would like to empty yourself and fill yourself up with Christ through baptism, giving yourselves to him with a commitment fully to serve him, have your sins washed away, then we would love to do that with you. We would love to be of any help if you